Hello and welcome to the Security DNA podcast produced by SecurityInfoWatch.com. I'm John Dauberstein, managing editor of Security InfoWatch and the producer of this podcast. The editors here at Security InfoWatch use this podcast to provide detailed, actionable information of value to security professionals. This will include industry news, trends and analysis, technology solutions, policy risk analysis, and management. For this episode, I have with me my colleague, Steve Lasky, who is the editorial director for the security group at Endeavor Business Media. Steve will be talking today with Greg Schneider. Greg is a CPP and president of Battle Tested Solutions, a San Francisco Bay Area-based security consultancy focused on delivering security management strategies, protective intelligence services, and tactical response training to domestic and global clientele. Greg brings over 25 years of experience in military, security, and law enforcement operations earned from service in Israel and the U.S. Greg previously served in the Israel Defense Forces in a prestigious combat unit. Upon his release from military service, Greg was selected for specialized training and operations in executive protection, intelligence, and security management under the auspices of the Israeli Ministry of Defense. He also served in a law enforcement capacity for the New York City Department of Investigations. Greg has conceived, managed, and implemented international security operations and projects in Israel, Europe, Africa, Mexico, and the United States. He is an active member of ASIS International's political extremism and travel risk communities, and he's also recognized for his contributions as a tactical performance coach to current and future tactical professionals. Greg's recent professional seminars, articles, and training include an article for Security Technology Executive Magazine, speaking at the GSX event last year, as well as in ASIS national events in 2018, 2017, and 2014. He was a founding instructor for Alive Active Shooter Survival Training in 2019 and was a contributor to the ASIS Active Shooter Initiative Guidelines. Greg earned his BA in Criminal Justice from George Washington University and his MS in Protection Management from the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. Greg has been board certified in security management since 2007 when he received his Certified Protection Professional designation. With that, let's turn the show over to Steve.
Well, as impressive as it sounds when you read your CV, Greg, your real life story is even more impressive. And, you know, you and I have talked a few times over the last several years, and, you know, it's you've got a broad and varied career, both in the military and the private sector, both here in the United States and in Israel, and obviously around the world as well. So just let's expand a little bit on your background. Talk to me a little bit about more about how your background has prepared you to deal with just the evolving security risks and environment that we're finding ourselves in today, and how you're able to better aid your clients.
Sure. So one of the things for anyone that's served in the military, you're dealing with like protecting hard targets, or you're dealing with like warfare and combat, those that are on the combat end of things. In Israel, it was all that, but being such a small country, you honed your skills because often you had to respond within your own country to certain threats. If I were to flash forward to more recent times, we've been seeing a lot of like soft targets in America being targeted, as they have been in Israel for decades, and so having that experience over there, I think, has helped me over here in providing solutions to those soft targets that are requiring security services or solutions of some sort.
Very good. And which is great for your clients because, you know, when we look at the changing landscape of security management, I mean, it's really staggering. It's not only in what the term means, but also how security management's being applied today. So, you know, I kind of want to discuss a little bit about some major points when we look at the security management roadmap that many enterprise level companies are facing. And I sort of break it down into several buckets: technology, threat landscape, security solutions, and then the physical security professionals themselves. So let's kind of dive into that a little bit. You know, when I look at technology, as technology develops quickly, you know, whether it's cyber or physical, with the explosion of AI, it's made it easier for criminals on both sides, especially on the cyber side, to launch attacks with fewer resources and skills. Mm-hmm. So that's got to be a big challenge for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, for one, technology really is either good or bad. It's just really how it's applied, right? So AI could be good. Certain new technological innovations are good. I mean, social media could be very, very good and helpful in getting word out. But at the same time, you know, it's like a double-edged sword. And I think that's right. The case with anything with tech.
Especially with social media. When you look at social media now, it's like almost used as a rallying cry and a call to battle for some groups. And it's, I guess, one of the main negative points is it sort of loops everybody into their own little world of a cone of silence. So you hear your own rebel rousers, but you don't hear alternate voices, which sometimes can be very dangerous.
Oh, yes and no, because the major social media platforms, they want engagement. The more you're engaged, the more ads are running. So sometimes what comes through your feed is something like a counterpoint to what you believe, but they know you're going to be emotionally invested to respond. And versus just if it's more like, someone else preaching to the choir, so there is a little bit of that. But
so what about the threat landscape then? When you look at a threat landscape, it's constantly changing. It includes the scope of potential and recognized cyber and physical threats affecting your user groups, organizations, specific industries, or particular times, on a holiday. We looked at, especially in Israel, that the date that Hamas picked to attack the kibbutzes and northern southern Gaza was not arbitrary. So the threat landscape, how do you get your clients to understand and be aware of what their landscape threats are?
Well, number one is you have to understand that threats are dynamic. Right. So you have some that are your existential threats that are just constant, but that may not come to fruition. For talking, that's more of like a geopolitical thing.
Right.
But even like locally at a company, their facility and they may not face a type of, say, car break-ins or something like that, right? You think, are we at risk of a car break? Yeah, maybe a little bit, but they don't often happen. Or if you look at threats as like low probability, high consequence, like an active shooter or some type of, even what we've seen in Israel is one thing, or high probability, low consequence. Okay, we are going to get these car break-ins, but it's not really going to doom us as a company or hurt our reputation.
Right.
So understanding those.
And I guess, too, we need to understand what, the solutions look like, too. When you're talking about the physical security market, it's migrating towards this. It's already been an integrated solution for years now, but it's migrating towards this almost completely network-centric environment.
Yeah.
Organizations are looking at putting together comprehensive solutions that incorporated all kind of edge devices and advanced technologies into a single pane of glass. So, one thing I notice is we're seeing, I just got off a phone meeting with a new vendor that's coming out of the DoD market into private sector. And they've developed this single pane of glass solution, and they're incorporating zero trust capabilities into physical security technology systems, which I think is a game changer when you really look at things. But so as a professional, when you're looking at solutions, especially technology, how do you advise clients to assess their risk and then look at implementation?
Well, Often the approach I use is a very, I would say almost like standard, because you have to look at the assets and the critical assets, what needs to be protected. And even companies have different, certain assets are a bit more sensitive than others, which require other types of solutions. But upon looking at the assets and the various threats, as we just talked about, and vulnerabilities, then we could drill down on, okay, what solutions make the most sense according to those threats after doing a risk assessment, what makes the most sense according to the company culture, and then the company budget. Because you're going to have a great solution, but of some sort, but if it's not, it doesn't jive with the company culture, or a system has all these bells and whistles, but it can't be supported so well or globally or what have you, then these are things you have to look at a bit deeper and closer, so it makes the most sense and is the most suitable for that client.
You know, we're also looking at the importance of what situational awareness and training means to a security management framework. You know, when we're looking at security or situational awareness, it's a support process that ensures that staff members and external and internal stakeholders have the information that they need to perform their work in the processes such as incident management, controls management, vulnerability management, service continuity management, and risk management. So, situational awareness can help minimize overreaction, because we've always been an industry, and it's gotten a lot better, that's been reactive, knee-jerk, and not proactive. And, this whole situational awareness, new software, but that mindset has really dominated security management executives today. Talk a little bit about the importance of situational awareness and training.
Well, yeah, you've been bringing up actually a really great point, and even how some of the verbiage has migrated from the protective and operational side of security to the tech side of security. Generally, situational awareness is of that human individual understanding their threat environment.
Right.
Now, what can I augment that is, yes, the cameras and access control. Then you can start to see cyber tools of like, I see maybe breadcrumbs or things of like, oh, someone's trying to perhaps attack us here, or someone's trying to do a surveillance here, or send a type of phishing email, which is help raise essentially the game of the security team and understanding what to act on and what not to act on. So in situational awareness, on the human side of things, those are things that are also very, very critical in any organization, in terms of who's coming onto your property, who isn't. Is that car idling over there too long? Is there a potential industrial espionage thing going down here at your place? And even if we look into especially the active shooters these days, a lot comes internally. We talk about red flags. Yeah. Oh, so even that's requires some type of being aware to the behaviors of people that work inside the building.
It's interesting too, because the training is essential. It's hard sometimes to fathom that a security executive doesn't really understand, the contents or the context of their risk. They they don't understand and can't identify potential risks. They don't know what proper preventative actions to take, and subsequently can't make informed decisions and help reduce the victimization of the people they're there to protect. So when you're putting together a program, and again, you're dealing with organizations and individuals, security, executive protection, what are some tips for developing situational awareness in the workplace that can really help mitigate risk and save lives?
Well, the old adage, if you see something, say something, is number one. But in terms of when I deliver training, I use something called the team. There's actually a book called that, like the team principle, which stands for training, education, awareness, and management. So I forgot who wrote the book, but I think you can find that at Az's library somewhere.
Right.
But what I like about that is you got educating the employees or executives of why we do certain things, having them being aware of what behaviors have led to certain bad actions. And the training part is actually taking a physical action, okay, doing something. So you could understand, understand why there's certain policies when you check in or check out. I have to flash an ID to get into a facility or access control. And then to be aware of someone maybe loitering around or exhibiting some type of behavior.
Right.
And then actually picking up a phone, or if you are either trained to go up to an individual, say, "Hey, how are you doing? How can I help you? You're trying to find, you're trying to go." Ask them an open question. That in itself is like putting all that into play, right?
The bottom line is you're trying to, put some sort of structured situational awareness program and framework into play. And the big thing, needs to be done is you got to encourage clear and thorough communication mm-hmm. with your employees and with your staff. And one of the things too is I think we can't underestimate corporate culture and helping promoting a good mental health approach at work as well. I think that is a big thing, because that only empowers your employees.
Mm-hmm.
So, when we talk about artificial intelligence, we kind of briefly touched on it as it relates to both physical and security management policy and practice. Are we in a place right now where we feel comfortable implementing solutions that are AI-based and involve machine learning? Do most of your clients and colleagues really understand about what an AI solution in their physical security system really entails and what it can do?
I think there's a lot of fear factor involved, because you kind of fear what you don't know.
Correct.
And AI is like this big, big thing out there. And maybe we see it if we're using ChatGPT, you want to do a research paper and boom, you see all these facts and stuff. I'm like, oh, wow, that's pretty fast and that's pretty cool. And this is the nature of what I was looking for. But then when we think of with images and video and things can be created that present a different narrative or false narrative, but that's presented as true intelligence or true data, that could be a bit of a problem. I mean, we talk about fake news and fake videos, and how even on the nation state level, certain countries can be duped into taking some type of military action based on what they legitimately see and believe to be true, even though it's false.
Right. I mean, deep fakes are becoming so sophisticated now. It's unbelievable. And to your point, we had the AI generated voice of President Biden mm-hmm. A couple of primaries ago that were telling people not to go out and vote. And so that can have some catastrophic potential. And we're seeing also, I mean, that's in the Russian FSB playbook. I mean, they're going to use AI right now, and they're using it to populate Twitter bots and misinformation. So mm-hmm. we really got to be aware of that. And that just creates a whole new paradigm of what security management really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Because when it comes to propaganda and disinformation, that is something actually the Russians are really good at, because they're great at destabilizing.
Right.
Okay. And you could see that even at not just like destabilizing America, but pushing out false narratives or causing conflict internally within companies.
Right.
Okay. And we're seeing that now. I mean, even since October 7th, we see this type of model, if you will, of all this information or propaganda getting pushed pushed out and then a lot of it false, and then activating and radicalizing people that are employees that
and people are so gullible. I mean, you know, sticking with and again, we're not, you know, neither one of us want to get very political. You got more in stake than I do being an Israeli, but you know, you see these almost tragically funny interviews on college campuses when they go in and they're asking all these students that are marching in favor of Hamas and Palestine what the issues are, and they have no idea. They're just caught up in that caught up in that parade and that, you know, that celebratory high, I guess, because they're on a world stage and they want to be active in something. So, you know, kind of segueing to that, I mean, the Jewish community was already in a high state of angst over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, and through the last administration, there seemed to be a rise in anti-Semitism and white supremacy, and just the acceptance of that sort of behavior. And in a recent article you wrote for our magazine, Security Technology Executive, you related to the challenges of protecting Jewish sites and facilities from the rising tide of anti-Semitic attacks. And you said that most incidents of vandalism, graffiti, assaults, IEDs, shootings, stabbings, direct verbal threats and menacing, doxing, phone and email attacks were designed to spread fear and occasionally hostage taking, like we saw in Coryville, Texas in January of 22. But I thought it was interesting that you went on to say that when designing a perimeter security solution, for example, the security professional is generally not concerned with political attackers' motivations for conducting their attack. They're concerned with designing a solution to protect that site from the attack, regardless of the motivation. But, you know, when you're, you know, if criminals are shoplifting or committing shooting attacks, there's all sorts of motivations. But Jewish sites have a multitude of motivations.
Right.
And so protecting those sites, sometimes it pays to understand the hows and whys of why these attacks are evolving in the first place. And you recommend, you know, what are some of the steps that you recommend in these solutions? And it doesn't just have to apply to, you know, synagogues or Jewish community centers. We're looking at mosques that are under attack. We've seen more church attacks, church bombings for Black churches and for other churches. You know, how do you deal with this, and why do you see such an uptick in all of this?
Yeah. So I think I mentioned in an article about 85% of all houses of worship deal with the same issues,
right,
which could be a homeless population, someone mentally unstable, someone that, let's say, has like a revenge fantasy against a pastor or whatever, or what have you, because that pastor gave salvation to a wife who left her husband and this and that, and he's now angry and like that kind of thing, or vice versa. You have all these issues of trespassing or, okay, but even have people that, like, they put the pastor, the rabbi or imam at such a level that they're almost like obsessed with that person. Well, they are saying the word of God, and they just really get into the weeds with it, and thereby cause some type of disruption. With the Jewish sites, it's different. It's in a way we have the added angst, if you will, of, you have people political reasons from the left and from the right.
Right, it's both.
People from racist reasons, right, white and Black, and from mostly from religious reasons, and then I'm talking just some really extreme radical Christian groups, as well as some very extreme radical Muslim groups, maybe some others, and then you have the geopolitical risk. That is, whenever something happens to Israel, they're goaded into a war or something, and they respond, all these other groups that have their issues with Jewish people and Israel, that they use that as their reasoning for launching the graffiti attacks, for doing all these vandalism or targeting or rushing into libraries to search for Jewish students. I mean, it's pretty bad. So,
beyond, you know, the obvious, how can you talk to your Jewish clients and when they're trying to, make for sure solutions. They've got a plan that's going to work.
Right. Yeah. So a lot of that comes with applying certain security measures.
Right.
From not just physical security. Meanwhile, on the, the observant temples, you call them, if you want to call it Orthodox, they have certain rules that you can't use electronics on the Sabbath.
Yeah.
You're right. So access control, well, during the week, maybe there's access control, a wired access control. Well, that has to be deactivated. Can't use communication devices. Now, but what you can do is you can train and empower your own congregation to be their own first responders.
Right.
You even have someone at the perimeter. Now, of course, you know, guards can be hired and stuff, but for the most part, having a well-trained congregation goes far. Not just, and we can bring more peace of mind, but, you know, it could definitely mitigate any types of, further damage if attack happens and that wasn't there.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and again, it brings up that point too, because having grown up in synagogues, you know, both Orthodox and conservative for the most part as a kid, Jewish people, for the most part, are very passive. They are not going to be the ones, you know, toting a sidearm or looking to engage. But that's all changed now. We're looking at the groups in New York, Evan Bernstein's group that has put together protection organizations for Jewish facilities, congregations, and they've spread that out all around the country. They're getting ready to open up one here in Atlanta. What is the proper stance, again, for congregants or any type of affected group, again, whether it be Muslim, Jewish, or, you know, LGBTQ? How do you fight back without intensifying a situation?
Right. Yeah. So, and part and parcel of security training is also the understanding de-escalation.
Correct.
Okay. And engaging and how to pacify people. That would be, you know, that's generally my recommendation. So when you get, and this is true of training across the board, it's not just one element of training. You think, okay, it's firearms training, that's what I need. No, it's a lot more than that. It's situational awareness training, de-escalation training. Firearms and maybe some self-defense tactics. True. And then also with, you know, the policies and procedures, if someone wants, you know, how to ask questions when someone wants to enter your house of worship. Now, houses of worship are generally open places. Hey, you're all welcome.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to defend.
Right. But showing perhaps more of a presence at the front, and someone that has those, I guess, a fence sitter that says, okay, there's some type of presence here, I should behave.
Well, you know, but we all hope that things de-escalate in both the hotspots in the world here, and that we can settle this without more bloodshed, and hopefully that's coming down soon. Greg, these are tough subjects. There are really no answers. We're dealing with human nature. We're dealing with socioeconomic issues. We're dealing with political issues. And again, there are a lot of things, outside pressures, that exacerbate all these, but, you know, your perspective on these, I really much appreciated. And then, we thank you for joining us today, and I hope to see you soon along the show trail, and take care, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
Well, Steve, I want to thank you and Greg for this compelling discussion about the exciting and changing landscape of security management. Just a reminder to our audience, this podcast is for you so you can stay informed about trends in the security industry anytime, anywhere. To access our podcast lineup, go to podbean.com and search for Security DNA. You can also find our podcasts in our Security Frontline, Integrator Newswire, and Security Week e-newsletters. Of course, we'd love to get some feedback from you, our listeners, about topics you're interested in. If you have a suggestion for our podcast, send an email to Steve Lasky, S-L-A-S-K-Y, at securityinfowatch.com. This episode of the Security DNA podcast was recorded and produced by John Doberstein, Managing Editor of Security InfoWatch. For Steve Lasky, Greg Schneider, and everyone here at Security InfoWatch, thanks for listening, and stay safe out there wherever you may be.